Mr. Tasky. The Antic Files. Episode 8.
Welcome once again to another episode of Inversitasky, The Antic Files. I'm your host, Wade, and this time I'll be strolling through Volume 2, Number 2, or May 1983, issue of Antic Magazine. This is Episode 8, and the subject is Communications. The price is still $2.50. There were 112 pages cover to cover in this issue, and 59 different advertisers. The cover has a dusk setting where this is a gradient background with reds and purple fading into deep blue at the top. At the bottom is a grassy field with a small river separating it from a futuristic city which is shrouded in a dome. Each building in the dome are perched on Fuji symbols and are covered in their own domes. There is a blonde boy in a white hoodie in the bottom right looking at you. He is covering his left ear, holding a Campbell's soup can to his right ear. There is a taut string attached to that, which is going to a silhouette closer to the river, which appears to be talking into another can. Above the dome in yellow script text, it says Communications. In the top left is the Antic logo in white with yellow shadow. The price is in yellow in the upper right, and plastered across the bottom in large white script, it says, now covering VCS and 5200. There is no editorial in this issue. And first up, we'll talk about ads. First, there's a full-page monochrome ad from Don't Ask Software featuring several products. The bulk of the ad is devoted to Teletari. I always like the cartoonish characters of their ads, and this one has a large IBM 3420 tape drive looking guy on the phone with a cutaway over to a personal computer that has arms and legs kicking back in an office chair, which is on the phone as well. It states, Teletari can buffer up to 20K, it's menu-driven, capable of 1200 baud, and supports the Bit3 80-column full-view 80 board, and supports any serial modem via the 850 interface, and is suitable for any RS-232 application, not just bulletin boards and online services. It's priced at $39.95, which is $121.49 today, and requires 32K of RAM, an 850 interface, and a disk drive. One program mentioned as well has a very small area in the ad and is called Abuse. This is dubbed as the Insult Exchange program where you can curse out the computer and it can answer back. It requires 40K, basic, and a disk drive, and it's only $19.95, which is $60.67 today. Quote, release your aggressions. Inflict abuse on anyone who's got it coming. End quote. I found this and played with it for kicks. It doesn't speak like Sam, it just prints text back at you. Screenshots on the website and links to both products in the show notes. The next ad is a half-page full-color ad from TMQ Software, trademark of quality, for FileFax Database Management System. It claims to be the easiest to learn, simplest to use DBMS available. It includes an 8-level sort, wide search capability, and powerful report generator. It's selling for $129 or $392 today. This title is on my list to be covered on the regular Inversitasky podcast. I might have to bump this up in the order. And the last ad I'll mention is from Ralston Clearwaters Electronics, which has a half-page full-color ad that states, for the wonderful world of Atari. The love affair begins, and that's surrounded by two red hearts. The rest is blue and white with a color photo of the products and a glass of wine. They are selling keyboards, the Commander 2400 series. One is the standard 2400, which is just the keyboard. There is also a 10 key with 8 additional keys, and finally the 2400 Pro model with the 10 key integrated, much like a modern keyboard. There is a special introductory price of $116 to $199, which is about $30 off the regular price. And if you're wondering, that's $353 today to $605. We'll get started in features with The Starting Line by Bob Stewart, This department article is titled Communication Concepts. This is a primer on communications with your computer. It gives a little back history on computer communications and where the world is as of the issue's publication date. It also explains what modems are and how they work, baud rates, protocols like RS-232, and services like bulletin boards and information services. The next article is called Info for Sale by Bill Tapscott, and this feature article gives the reader an overview of some available dial-up information services. There are a handful mentioned, including Knowledge Index and Dialog, but the focus is on what you could call the big three, CompuServe, The Source, and Dow Jones News Retrieval Network. Rates for these were astronomical. The Dow Jones Network was upwards of $72 an hour, and that's $218.95 today during prime time. CompuServe was up to $32.50 an hour, which is only $98.83 today for prime time. Can you imagine paying $100 plus per hour for access to some of the same information that is at our fingertips today for a modest monthly fee that gives us 24/7 access? Jeez, I remember when I got my CompuServe account, I had to only call after something like 7 p.m. to avoid prime time fees. And returning back to the article, it does give a feature breakdown of each of the services in a chart form, which is handy. The next article is called Talking to Big Brother by Jordan Powell, and this feature article discusses what it takes to have your Atari talk to an IBM mainframe. It describes the equipment you need to connect, an 800, an 810, an 850, a modem cable, terminal software, specifically Chameleon available from APX. It also gives details on the communication protocols. The key finding is that IBM mainframes use EBCDIC, E-B-C-D-I-C, whereas your Atari uses custom ASCII, or ATASCII. That is the obstacle to overcome, and the article walks you through doing so. Early in my career, I wrote a customer order entry program for the PC for our customers in the food service industry. It also included several PC-based utilities to manipulate mainframe data. We had an IBM 43 series mainframe, which was also linked to a corporate mainframe in another state. And for this order entry program, I needed copies of the item master file, customer master file, among a few others to get proper pricing on a daily basis. All this, of course, had to come off the mainframe. So we got a PC-based tape reader that could read the tapes from the mainframe, and every day we generated the files to tape via the IBM 3420 tape drives and loaded them into a PC, which took all the EBCDIC data in the files, converted it to ASCII, and then loaded it into databases for each customer. When they placed orders using the client program, they had the option of downloading updated information. The primary thing they needed updates for were the items. Pricing wasn't locked in until the actual order was placed and processed by the mainframe. Essentially, that pricing information was for convenience and was pre-calculated in one of the utilities for items that they would be browsing on their PC, thus hiding item cost from prying eyes. Since restaurants mainly used it, they only needed items they had previously purchased and would need to be purchased repeatedly. So they didn't need the full item index, just their items. The system worked pretty well, and I learned a lot about EBCDIC and ASCII in that job, and the experience was one of the most rewarding of my career. The next feature is called Inside Atari by Joseph DeCure. This department article introduces the Atari 835 Direct Connect modem and Telelink 2. The important feature of the 835 is that it does not need the 850 interface. The second important feature is that it's a direct connect, not an acoustic coupler type modem. I didn't know that the 835 only worked with Telelink 2 and was not sold without it. One cool feature of Telelink 2 is that it has an EEPROM in it, which stores the configuration data so it persists between uses. I didn't know the 835 couldn't dial with tones, only pulses. That's another oddity for a direct connect modem. And Telelink was featured on Inverse Ataski in Season 2, Episode 14. And there's a link in the show notes. Joe, as you might recognize, was the chief engineer of Standard Technologies Corp., where he designed voice and data communication systems and is a former Atari alumni. Fun fact, he shares the patent for the ANTIC chip and the Atari 800 computer. The next feature is the cover art contest. This feature article is just an announcement for the cover art contest mentioned in the last issue. The next feature is called Invisible Sector by Chuck McMath. This feature article presents a method to write customized data to Sector 720, which is normally not accessible. An unused 128-byte chunk of data for you to record your disk ownership, dates, or whatever you want. It goes into detail discussing why the sector is allocated but can't be used, and hint, it's the way the VTOC volume, or volume table of contents, is mapped. There are 720 bits that mark the sectors as in use or not in use, and they are mapped 0 to 719. But the disk drive cannot access commands for sector 0, so it's referenced as 1. The true sector 720 is not mapped into the VTOC. The assembly source for accessing the sector is listed and detailed, as well as a couple of basic programs for recording and viewing the data. There's even a basic directory listing program that will display the contents before the actual directory. There's some screenshots on the website. The next feature is called Atari Terminal by William Ho. This feature article is very long and goes into great detail about using your Atari for communications with remote systems. Types of modems, types of connections, RS-232, pinouts for modem cables, transfer protocols, etc. are all covered. It mentions the type of remote systems you might connect to, such as paid services like CompuServe and user-run services like bulletin boards. The bulletin boards mentioned are Amos from the Michigan Atari Computer Enthusiasts, and I know one user that'll be particularly happy about that. Armudic, A-R-M-U-D-I-C, by Frank Hubbard. Atari Board by Bob Alliger, and Atari Bulletin Board System by Rod Rourke. It also has an overview of three terminal programs available, Telelink from Atari, and two public domain ones, JTERM by Frank C. Jones, which appeared in Compute's January 1983 issue, and A-Modem by Jim Steinbrecher. Both are rated as excellent, but William prefers JTERM. At the end of the article, it lists about 40 BBSs, the state they are in, the type of board they are, and the phone numbers, but no names. The article also includes the listing for Mini A-Term by Jim Steinbrecher, which is a bare-bones terminal program written in BASIC. It is intended to be used once, just long enough to download a full-featured terminal program from a BBS or paid service, and there are screenshots on the website. The next feature is called Idiot Proofing Your Keyboard by Jerry White. This feature article presents a basic program that is aimed at preventing bad data inputs by users of your program. Hint, don't use input statements. Use a routine like this one instead, which restricts input to just the keys needed. There's some screenshots on the website. The next feature is Telechess by Thomas McNamee and Peter Goodeve. This feature article presents a basic two-human-player chess game that has been enhanced to allow remote play. At RectaPete may be interested in this. The listing is a full 5 pages long. The game uses joysticks for navigation, and it allows chat between players. This took me a little over an hour to type in. I got it to run, but it gets an error when it attempts to communicate. Error 131 at line 3140, which means trying to read from a write-only device. The open command is mode 13. I changed it to 12, but it still couldn't get past the error. I'll see if there's an update in the next issue or so. There are screenshots on the website. The next feature is called Not Just a Pretty Face by David Duberman. This feature article is a description of the typesetting process used in the magazine, specific to the program listings. It details how the typesetter forms the special characters via rules of short thin lines and explains why the space character can't be represented accurately, which is because they can't draw it. This is one of the problems I noted and have run into, and a solution would be to draw a simple empty box. The workaround is to insert a remark statement in the listing where multiple spaces are used and note how many are needed. The step-by-step of the process is given. It tells you that they use a 48K Atari 800, a Percom disk drive, an Atari 850 interface, a Hayes Smart Modem 1200, and DataSoft's Teletalk Terminal program to transmit the listings to the typesetter. It also includes a table for control characters showing the typeset, what to type to get it, and what its decimal value is for both normal and inverse video. The next feature is called AnticPix 10, and that's P-I-X, by David Duberman. This feature article is a top 10 list of games that they have chosen. Frogger, Final Flight, Centipede, Apple Panic, Sands of Egypt, Fort Apocalypse, Castle Wolfenstein, Wizard of War, Submarine Commander, and Sea Dragon. There are many reviews and color screenshots are included. The next feature is called Dragon Smoke by Bob Albrecht and George Firedrake. This department article is a myriad of things this time. It presents their solutions to the Game Master Apprentice problem, where you need to write a program to roll a D&D character using the 3d6 method. It also presents two routines in BASIC. One is to remove all spaces from a string, and the other is to split a two-digit number into tens and the ones digits. Additionally, it includes a program to tell you if the number you entered is positive, negative, or zero. I think they may be leading up to a Guess My Number game. And they present a new problem called Digit Factory. For each digit, 0 to 9, you need to write a basic expression whose value is equal to the digit. There are some rules you must adhere to, such as only being able to use each number once, and each operation only once, but as many parentheses as you want. So far, this article series hasn't garnered a lot of interest from me, and I'm hoping it gets better over time. The next feature is In the Public Domain by Stephen Grohl. This department article brings a basic game called Microids. The article sets up the background, and it's set in the distant future of 1993.
Oh my.
Indeed. Scientists have developed a new type of germ warfare called Microids. You can partially control different types and need to route yellow ones off the screen and blue ones to the cage. There is another variant of the game where you can play as well, which you choose at start. Here's some sound from the gameplay. And there are some screenshots on the website. The next article is called Games Department, and this department article is new in this issue and has two components, one for the VCS and one for the 5200. On the VCS side, it's titled Atari VCS by Dan Gutman. This tells a little bit of trivia at the top four home video game consoles: Atari 2600, Atari 5200, ColecoVision, and Intellivision 2. It states that each have keyboard and memory expansions, though I don't think that's quite right. Did the 2600 keyboard ever ship? And I don't recall one for the 5200 at all. The VCS came out in 1977 and was $180. That's $918 today. And at the time of the article, its price was only $95, which is $288.89. And its price was dropping. A much more reasonable price point at any rate. It describes the VCS as we mostly knew it from a release point of view. It includes a picture, but it's clearly the Vader version, all black, and different than the description. Much of this article is an introduction to the system, which is about 6 years too late. The 5200 side is by Robert Caporel, MD. This is by James Caporel's brother, and he starts the article with an anti-nepotism statement and establishes his credentials to qualify the article. Fun fact, he was a doctor in Atlanta and held the New York State Pinball Championship title while he was in med school. The article describes the system and two of the games he enjoys, which are Star Raiders and Missile Command. I had a friend with the Atari 5200 when I was younger, and I never liked the controller. I always felt that the games were essentially the same as the 800 as well. The next article is called Education by Jack Perrin and Howard Chan. This department article is titled Burning Candle at Both Ends. So remember the education article from episode 5, Antic December 1982, volume 1, number 5, which would have been issue number 5? You know, the one where a jar was placed over a candle and it burned until the oxygen molecules were all used up? this article takes that program and converts it to Atari's Microsoft BASIC. The full listing is presented along with the key differences. The next issue is Computer Camp by Deborah Burns. This feature article talks about the success of Atari's computer camps from last year and introduces the program for this year. Kids from 10 to 16 can attend from 2 to 8 weeks. Traditional camp activities are included along with the computer time. This year, there will be 7 locations hosting up to 96 kids each. There are 12 computer systems serving 24 students per class. And the locations are Greenfield, Massachusetts, East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. I wonder if they had day trips to ride the steam train. Glencoe, Maryland, Asheville, North Carolina, Faribault, Minnesota, Danville, California, and San Diego, California. Looks like the Midwest and the Southeastern regions got hosed, but New England fared very well. The price for 2 weeks is $890. That's $2,706 today. And each additional week is $425 or $1,292 today. A full 8 weeks would set you back $3,440, which is $10,458 today. Ouch. Back in 2015, Kay Savitz from the Antic podcast interviewed the camp program director, Bob Kahn, and several campers. There's a link to the episode in the show notes. And the last feature for this issue is called Tape Topics by Carl Evans. This department article shows you the audio playback circuit schematic. It's described as a basic audio amplifier circuit that operates on only the second stereo channel. This article is short compared to the previous ones, coming in at just one page, which includes the half-page diagram. In the Tangle Angles Q&A section of this article, a reader asked about increasing the baud rate, and Carl states that it's only reliable up to about 600 baud, double the design standard. He goes on to tell of a program called Programmer's Workshop by Synergistic Software, which writes at 900 baud. The downside is that the load afterward only worked about 1 out of 30 times. There's a bit of miscellany here. We'll talk about these in, I guess, any random order. First, there is a tiny contest mentioned here. In big text, it says photo. Then under it, it says, who's the mystery programmer? Then there's a picture of a man dressed in a trench coat with a German-style military helmet, who is hunched over an Atari 800 typing away. The first correct answer received by U.S. Mail is to receive an APX software title of their choice. It says, that's a hint, mein Freund. Then it gives the address. My guess? Chris Crawford. Next, there is a new column in this issue titled Atari Clinic. Its aim is to assist with these mystical hardware questions. This article is by Steve Switzer. In it, questions submitted by readers for strange hardware-related issues are answered, such as, my computer locks up after about an hour. What's wrong? Also, should I oil my 810 disk drive? It's very noisy.
Have you tried turning it off and on again?
That's my favorite. And last, in the product review section is a review for Atari Writer. It got a relatively good review as expected. Atari Writer was featured on Inversitaski in Season 2, Episode 1, and there's a link in the show notes. Did receive a couple of pieces of feedback, and we'll start with this first one, which I received too late to make the last episode. On Alcatraz BBS, Gyark the Warden writes, hey Wade, I may have been off the BBS scene, but I have kept up with the podcast and I really enjoy the Antic Files. I wasn't one for magazines back then, and I love hearing about all the stuff I missed out on. Keep up the great work, Craig. Thanks, Craig. I'm glad you can now relive the era by hearing about it and that it's providing entertainment for you. If I make a mistake, just don't sentence me to solitary. I also received the following message from Paradroid on the Particles BBS, and he writes, I've really been digging your podcast lately, especially the Antic Files. I have all the Antic issues in PDF, and I like following along as you go through them. Since I was originally a Commodore guy, I get a lot more out of them with an experienced Atari guy going through them, explaining things as you go, than I would if I was just trying to read them on my own. I'm glad to see that you're out of the trial stage and you're going to keep doing them. Keep up the good work, Wade. Thanks for the kind words. I'm glad you're enjoying it and having an opportunity to review the magazines alongside while I go through them. It really is a great magazine. If you have any feedback or stories related to Antic Magazine or any firsthand experiences with the products mentioned, or you just want to comment on the podcast itself, I'd like to hear about it. My contact information is on the Inverse Itasky website. Special thanks go to Zane Little for the track The Cool Factor from the album Another Bag of Chips, which is used in the opening sequence. You can find it on the Free Music Archive. And I also want to thank you for listening and continuing to support me in this podcast. Thanks, all.